Welcome to the Remington Podcast, where we take a deep dive into all things ammunition. I'm your host, Audrey Mays, and this is part two of the three-part series, Live from Pheasant Fest. Today, we're sitting down with meat eaters Ryan Cal Callahan to talk about conservation issues. We touch on Pheasants Forever's efforts in restoring habitat and how to get involved, explain what the Farm Bill is, Meat Eaters Land Access Initiative, and dive into the PATH program. We're live on the 2024 Pheasant Fest floor. Let's get into it. Ryan Callahan.
Yes, ma'am.
We're here live at Pheasant Fest. Meat Eater Chief Conservation Officer?
Ooh, Director of Conservation.
Director of Conservation.
Yeah, I feel like if you have a chief title, you have to have some prior law enforcement background.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So what is your involvement with Pheasants Forever?
A volunteer, basically.
Okay. Yeah.
Really like the organization. I've been around it for a long time. Starting in Montana, learning about the organization in a like very grassroots mm-hmm. style, through some friends that, started working for PF and, learning more about like that habitat work, which is honestly buried underneath the name.
Yes,
right? It's like
yeah.
Pheasants Forever. And the, you know, in places where there are pheasants, my perception at that point was like, oh, those birds are doing just fine.
Mm-hmm.
They're not native.
Sure.
Like, wasn't all that excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you learn, like I said, about all the work that's being done, that's kind of hidden behind that name, the big mm-hmm. flashy bird, then to me, it got super, super interesting. So habitat work, access work, and then, you know, once you start coming to like a Pheasant Fest situation, all the dogs, the people are kind of a class of their own.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely its own culture here.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is my favorite show of the year, full disclosure. So
everybody's so nice.
Yeah.
It's like a Midwest trope, but it's not like folks are nice. They want to talk about their dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's definitely something to be said about the fact that like the biggest pheasant in the world
mm-hmm.
is not all that different than the other pheasants out there, right?
Yeah, and people obsess over pheasants. It's like yeah. it's a kind of trophy hunting that has nothing to do with size,
yes.
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, and then, yeah, once I started meeting other people in the organization and, you know, start like they employed the first farm bill biologist
mm-hmm.
and now there's over 200 farm bill biologists. You come into a room like this and there's like, you know, 22-year-old kids that are stoked out of their minds to work on the farm bill.
Yeah.
You know, and that's unique and awesome and something I think we need more of, you know. So
yeah, can you explain to the people listening what the farm bill is?
Oh yeah, it's not just for farmers. It's probably like the single most impactful conservation package that we have working for us every year. And a big part of that would be like the CRP program, Conservation Reserve Program, where, you know, the short version of this is it's an incentive program that incentivizes farmers to take row crop land out of production and rest it
mm-hmm.
For terms of, you know, typically several years at the minimum, and that rested ground is planted in a mix of native forbs grasses, and that is habitat.
Mm-hmm.
So it incentivizes more habitat, more places for birds, bucks, bees, pollinators to grow and be safe, eat all that stuff. So
yeah, like you said, I mean, people think that Pheasants Forever is more focused on the animal, but it's actually focused on where the animal lives. It's all habitat work in the background. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a bait and switch operation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Beware. And that's what there's all sorts of like really awesome conversations that happen here around like, you know, like, coyote suppression. Mm-hmm. Like how many coyotes should you be killing? Mm-hmm. Right. And, that's always a question mark of, should you be shooting any, should you be shooting some, what's happening on that landscape. And it's like the more better, more data situation always. But, pheasants forever have had these articles that explain like, well, coyotes predate on all these other nest predators.
Right.
And if you want to shoot some coyotes, they occasionally get your birds if you're a bird-minded person. But they're really knocking back their competition out there. The foxes that take down a lot of birds, the skunks, possums, raccoons that eat a lot of eggs. Mm-hmm. So you got to be careful of like what predator you're taking out at what point in time.
Right.
And that's just a new conversation for a lot of people that like often grew up in the hunting world forever, where it was like, oh, that's your number one enemy is coyote.
It's a coyote. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, like most of these conversations, there's you're not like super blown away by it, mm-hmm. right? Because it makes sense.
Right.
Right. You're like,
oh, yeah. I never thought about
that. It's like if you killed all the deer, what would happen? Right.
So, right.
Yeah. And then, so conservation reserve programs, a huge one. And then within the farm bill also, there's a lot of easement work, super important easement work for habitat on private land. So wetland conservation or wetland easements, native grass easements, things that we know produce wildlife. And often the reason that they're in the farm bill too is by leaving those intermittent wetlands alone, leaving these native grass stands alone, you're making that area more drought tolerant, more fire tolerant. It's a better system.
Okay. Just taking the human element out of it and like letting it be, or?
Well, this is kind of Western specific, right? Because like if you're running a cattle grazing operation, you can run that cattle grazing operation in a very similar way to when the last large grazers were on the landscape, you know, hundreds of thousands of bison rolling across,
right,
mowing everything down. And then our upland birds love that stuff. You know, they like dense cover for hiding, but outside of that, the food exists just like on a forest floor where that sun can penetrate down to the ground, more invertebrates, and they have a little overhead cover. And then when it's like mating season, they like those kind of more mown down spots to get out and display. You know, so it's like right. That mixed system, mm-hmm. to where if it's just leaving something alone, you can kind of get into like this, super uniform landscape that doesn't have that variety.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like nature is always changing.
Right.
But when we like come in and say like, okay, now we're going to just totally go into preservation mode and not touch this, mm-hmm. That only works for like a short period of time.
So it's the hold on, don't touch this. It's more like a like an emergency situation is the only time you should do that. Otherwise, we need to be out there like interacting with the environment.
Yeah, because you know nature's way of managing is like rolling a fire through there every 2 years, 3 years, right?
Yeah, starting over from zero. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, and you know, fast fires leave a lot behind, but generate a lot of regrowth. It's a great tool, but it's a tool that we've gone away from, you know, because people don't like smoke
right.
in the summer, and mm-hmm. people don't like smoke in the spring, and people are scared of fires, and in a lot of these areas, like rightfully so, you know, like that I didn't check the news this morning, but right before we got down here, there's a fire ripping across East Texas that was just shy of like 1 million acres.
Oh, wow.
And burning homes and stuff like that, too. So,
yeah, got to take care of the undergrowth or it just spreads, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. PFQF is organization that I think all other nonprofits should really look at, because they do just an amazing job of like getting that message of grow habitat to grow birds. Mm-hmm. If you just want birds, they're only going to be here for a season if you're not creating the habitat.
Right.
Right. What you do today is going to provide for tomorrow.
The whole teach man to fish thing.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And PFQF has been able to accomplish what a lot of other organizations haven't, which is like most of your membership here understands that like that's what the program is. Mm-hmm. And they know where the money's going. It's a very efficient organization. Like,
very transparent.
Yeah, the chapters are really incentivized to not sit on funds.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're holding their banquets, they're incentivized to like have a project ready and try to get that money spent.
As soon as possible.
Yep.
Yeah, I like that about it too. What can, you know, obviously, hey, come and join PFQF, but like other than that, what can people do to help with the Farm Bill actions?
Oh boy, right now, I mean, it's an odd thing. It's kind of like old bar rules, right? Like the hunting community is like, well, no politics, no religion.
Mm-hmm. Don't talk about it.
Don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, no, this is our hunting time.
Yeah.
But the reality is, like, you just gotta, like, if you're buying your hunting license, your conservation stamp,
mm-hmm.
Conservation license, duck stamp, the other thing that you also need to do every year is be in contact with your elected officials.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, because of like the budget situation that's going on the federal level, like we may not have an authorized farm bill until 2025 right now. So that's going to limit the amount of acres that we enroll into those rest areas, the CRP, where it's going to limit new easements. And as we know, these multi-generational farms and ranches are turning over every day.
Yeah.
And every turnover introduces an opening for a new management style.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I would certainly like to see is a way for those family farms, family ranches to provide for wildlife.
To farm for wildlife. Yeah.
And also make a living.
Right.
Right. So, and there's ways to do that. And there's some fantastic examples here in this building.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Johansson is a awesome dude. He's talking here today. And he's a classic example of like, I think he was working as a stockbroker,
mm-hmm.
hated it, wanted to come back to the family farm. His dad, which is like awesome old curmudgeon in coveralls and smoking Marlboros, is like, well, if you can pay for the insurance, you can take on a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, and then like, if you can prove yourself, you can keep doing it. And so, you know, he went, ran through the family operation and looked at areas of high production, low production, where they're breaking even, mm-hmm. on, you know, the seed and the fuel bill, you know, found that it really was better for their bottom end to just not farm some areas, and they happen to be a lot of the intermittent wetlands, because they just weren't getting that yield, that return. So
hi, how are you?
I have something for you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, appreciate it.
Have a good day.
Good to see you.
Case in point right there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that is an invested individual.
Yeah, no kidding. He so invested that he, you know, plowed his way into a magazine. That's really cool. anyways. And, you know, people will come up here and talk to me about upland birds all day. You know, like they will stand here for 24 hours if they could and talk to me about it. So, it's a culture. It's a way of life.
Try walking around with a little yellow lab.
I bet.
Like the dog stories.
Yeah. I mean, and Snort's famous, so she wears it well.
I think, yesterday she was pretty pumped about walking around here.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty new and fun. And then today she's like walking a little slower. Like, oh boy, this is
She's like, more? Day two.
More?
We're still here?
Yeah. So
that's cool to hear about that farm you were telling me about. I mean, it's crazy how, you know, if you're just a little intentional, it makes a whole world of difference.
Yeah, and there's... We need, something that's scalable as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need replicable practices that are, these are a lot of buzzwords, but they have to be, accessible to people
mm-hmm.
who are actually trying to make a living out there.
Repeatable. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they do exist, you know, and I think kind of going back to the farm bill, there's still a lot of work there to be done, because like all these biologists here will tell you that the process is cumbersome. It's very daunting.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're somebody who, like our friend who just stopped by, is probably not like the best with computers.
Right.
So a lot of what they do is like walk people through these programs. They help them kind of break down those barriers and get access to get started.
Mm-hmm.
Utilizing what lives in that farm bill. So the work that needs to be done is making it more accessible, more efficient. So
understand common practice, right? Is kind of the goal. So I know you do a lot of work in land access, and as someone who hunts public land in Colorado, I appreciate that about you. But I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, what you have going on in terms of your land access initiative and all that.
Yeah, boy. So yeah, Meat Eater Land Access Initiative. We started with a relatively small project in Maine called Shiloh Pond with the High Peaks Alliance. If you're out in Maine, Brent West is the dude. You can say hi. That puppy's name is Snort.
So cute.
And you know, small acreage, but the Kingship or Kingsfield Township in Maine, that was their first public land of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that they decided that they needed to acquire some land for the town itself is because Maine operates, you know, it's like 92% private ground, and a ton of uninhabited private that is timber company owned, and forever there's been this law in place where it's open trespass law. So you can go hunt, you can go fish, as long as it's not posted, you can go.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as a lot of things have changed in a lot of places, there's more and more trespassing signs getting popped up. Some of these big timber companies that, you know, had this amazing amount of maybe a lack of common sense compared to some folks these days. They would allow total free access, and some of those places are, which I love and appreciate, some of those places are going to like a club model.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's a pay-to-play thing, and they're leasing more and more of that ground, and more private property signs are going up. So Maine is a place that there's more land trust than anywhere, but they need to start getting some stuff set aside for the public, because the trend is, again, posting more property rather than tearing signs down.
Yeah.
So that was a great place to start. And then we, and this is a mix of private dollars and then facilitated dollars, meaning that we'll create like the auction house oddities, we'll channel donations to the right nonprofit partner that we're working with specifically for an acquisition. Mm-hmm. So the last one that we did was through the Pheasants Forever program for Wildcat Bend, mm-hmm. which is on the lower Yellowstone, Montana. And this is like a chunk of ground that I've said many times, like the guy who wanted to do this, we need to build him a statue because it is like 2 miles of Yellowstone riverfront. He could have subdivided and put a bunch of houses out there and made a giant pile of money.
Right.
But instead, he took less money. He waited a very long time for like the slow wheels of state government and the bureaucracy to allow for this purchase of his property at a lower market value and the transition of that private property into a state wildlife management area. And Pheasants Forever is really kind of the glue that worked between the landowner, Montana Fish, Wildlife and Parks, and now the governor's office. So we teamed up with Pheasants for the last piece of that property that needed to be acquired, mm-hmm. and fundraised and really blew that one up, and we were able to cut the check for the last $50,000 that needed to be raised.
Yeah.
I think we went $150,000.
Oh, wow. That's really amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good to hear. I mean, I'm glad that people are taking a vested interest, you know, in the land that we hunt. I mean, I think that everyone, not everyone, but a lot of the hunting public is starting to see or think about when it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, like there's and more humans, there's more houses, obviously, you know, people need a place to live and we're spreading out. But once that land is gone and torn up, it's it's hard to get it back. So,
it's hard to get it back. Especially when it is a house.
Right.
Like the odds of that going back to grass are very, very low.
Mm-hmm.
We know through all the roller coaster of like the hunting population that the number one thing is like we got to have a place to go.
Mm-hmm.
We got to have a place that offers the things that we're after, which isn't necessarily like a dead bird or buck at the end of the day, but the opportunity
mm-hmm.
that could happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, some safe distance between people and, just a place to get away.
Right.
Right. And we have got to take advantage of these opportunities while we have them to get these places acquired. If not acquired, get those access easements established,
mm-hmm.
and keep finding new ways to incentivize people to provide that access.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Because, I mean, if easements are a phenomenal conservation tool and an access tool, but if you do like a simple Google search on easement, the first thing that pops up are a bunch of law firms that specialize in getting rid of easements.
Yep.
Right. So for everybody that thinks I'm a broken record for talking about how awesome easements are, you got to understand there's 10 times as many people mm-hmm. trying to get rid of them. Yeah. And there's stuff that I utilize all the time.
Yeah. I think people will use them more than they know that they do.
Oh, for sure.
So fight for the easements.
Yeah. You know, it's, we got it. It's a use them or lose them type of deal too, right. You know, so,
mm-hmm.
yep.
And they can, and people can find all this information about your land access initiative on the website.
Yeah. Over at meateater.com. And then, you know, I talk about, in a scripted fashion, researched in scripted fashion, a lot of this stuff on my podcast, Cal's Week in Review, too. So
yeah. I do enjoy the sound effects.
Phil.
So
yeah, Phil
it's
Taylor.
Phil.
Yeah, Phil the engineer, man. He is he's awesome. Yeah, could not do it without Phil. And Jordan Sillers is writing and researching as well right now. And then, you know, because we have state legislatures in session, there's a lot of really important information on frankly, like bad bills.
Right.
Yep. That are coming out all the time.
There's a lot of them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And so we, at this point, we'll have a legislative podcast and we'll try to add in an extra drop that'll cover, you know, some interviews or just highlight the crime desk, something a little more lighthearted than the heavy information on the legislative side. So,
right.
Yeah.
Good summary, because those bills are thick. So
they are. Yeah. And it's important to read, you know, a big thing that we're seeing right now, like this trend of trying to quote unquote, like modernize wildlife commissions, game commissions, is starting to happen all over in every state. There's the constant power struggle between the legislative arm and a game commission, which in my mind should be an independent game commission to function properly on behalf of wildlife and access. And you know, this is stuff that we all just have to be tuned into, because it takes a coalition, a broad coalition of people to get things done, especially these days.
Right. Especially with like the rise of ballot box biology and all that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So like the Colorado situation is one that you have to be able to extrapolate out and say, hey, this is how this could set a precedent that it will affect what you do.
Right.
With your bird dog that has nothing to do with mountain lions.
Right.
But it does.
Yeah,
exactly. So there's all sorts of interest groups out there that like being outside for the exact same reasons that we do. And we really got to stop getting more and more fractionalized into more specific groups and lobby together as just folks who go out on public land.
Mm-hmm. Just use public land in general. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And vote, people.
Yeah,
go,
man.
Go vote.
Yeah, vote. But yeah, make those phone calls, emails, go testify on bills. It's not that scary. And it's really important stuff. So
yeah,
I mean, there's a couple of things, but yeah, you can testify on the bill to a committee. You can go set up an appointment or just knock on doors at your Capitol when things are in session. And then, there's a lot of different groups that put together like Capitol days, days at the Rotunda, things like that, that are designed so you can, those days are kind of set aside so you can go in there and talk to your elected officials. Yeah.
Where do you, where would you find your elected officials' information, like their email address or their phone number?
Just Google it.
Just Google it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who is my representative?
Okay.
Like the simplest way. And you will find the information. There's no excuse not to figure it out.
It's all public info.
Yes.
Okay, great.
It's all public info. And you know, the reality is that I remind people in my home state of Montana, when things get really hot and heavy, is, you know, our state representatives, it's not their only job. Right. So a lot of times you call the phone number that's listed, it's a cell phone and they're out running a tractor somewhere. It's often a great idea to come up with something that person has done well. Like,
compliment them.
Yeah, I appreciate you co-sponsored this bill. Now I got to tell you that this bill is terrible.
Right. We should vote against it. Yeah.
Right. And this is why these specific points are why I am telling everybody I know to vote against this thing. Right. And that's good information for them.
Yeah.
It's not like, hey, this is screwed up.
Right. You're not like chastising them. You're like, hey, man, having a conversation. They're, you know, normal people. So don't attack them, you know.
Pleases and thank yous. And then have a concise statement. always gets it across.
That's good. Yeah. Well, that's good advice. Come to the shows, guys, also. Like, the shows, in the panels, you learn so much. So much.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It really is. And again, that's why I love this organization, is they really find a way to get conservation to be a part of the daily conversation. Mm-hmm. And the information's like really accessible here. One of the things that like we're doing for that PATH program is you can buy a $25 refillable beer glass. Mm-hmm. And it's with matching, it's an acre of access per beer.
Per beer glass?
Yeah.
Or per beer?
$25.
Dang.
$25 an acre.
An acre?
Yes.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
That's
Which
really
is amazing.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, can you dive? Do you have time?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Can you dive a little bit into that PATH program?
Yeah. So, it's a private land public access program, meaning that it's another program to incentivize landowners to open up their private property mm-hmm. to the general public.
Okay.
So it'd be like similar to Kansas has WEHA, Montana has block management. It'd be another option out there. Mm-hmm. In South Dakota, it's called CREP, C-R-E-P. But this is another option out there to open up more acreage. It started out at about 4,000 acres of total land. They've signed up over 8,000 acres so far this year, and we're not very far into the year, really.
Yeah,
so
that's awesome.
Yeah. So it is nice to have these programs that exist that are they're on your OnX layer now. Mm-hmm. They're signed. Their signage, where to park,
right.
Those programs work really, really well. But there is education out there too, because some people treat their general public land mm-hmm. not well.
Yeah.
And then they come out and they see other people parked in places and they're like, oh, this must just be a state chunk or a federal chunk or
right.
whatever. So you got to police your own ranks and pick up after people to keep that stuff going. In addition to buying a $25
mug
of beer. So, yeah.
in PATH, what is the, perk for the landowner other than like obviously helping wildlife?
Well, with all these programs, there's an added layer of liability insurance mm-hmm. Provided through the state or an organization, which is a comforting thing because mm-hmm. that's always like, well, what if somebody gets hurt?
Right.
And then there's typically either a per acre monetary incentive or a per hunter monetary incentive or both.
So you get paid for people to come hunt on
yep.
your land. Okay, that makes sense.
Yep. But also you can, by enrolling your place into programs like these, you can also qualify for more damage assistance mm-hmm. on those years where wildlife populations, knock down all your fences and eat all your alfalfa. Mm-hmm. You can get more help with some of the state wildlife programs that can include habitat improvement, wildlife friendly fencing, things like that too. So the idea is to provide like operational help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Nothing but positives is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I sure think so.
Yeah. I don't want to keep you, but thank you so much again for meeting with me and good luck on your talk.
No, thank you very much.
There you have it, guys. Remington is on the rise. Like, comment, subscribe, and be sure to share this podcast with your hunting or shooting buddies. Be on the lookout for the next episode. You can find us anywhere you can stream podcasts. And for more Remington content, follow us on all social media platforms at Remington1816. If you have any questions or have a topic you'd like us to talk about, feel free to email us at podcast@remington.com. That's podcast@remington.com. If you want more information about how to get involved with Pheasants Forever, you can visit pheasantsforever.org. Want to get involved in Meat Eater's Land Access Initiative? Check out themeateater.com. Thanks for listening to episode 2 of this 3-part series, and tune in next Monday for part 3. See you then.